At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, Warmer from Evo! Welcome to Love Evo Las Vegas for Cusco Soups with myself, Greg Eeps Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast, and we've got an excellent podcast for you. In segment number two, we're going to be joined by Curtis Rogers. He does amazing work over at 710 Seattle Sports. If it's Pacific Northwest sports, he is doing an amazing job of covering it, everything from baseball to college basketball. The list goes on and on. I have to talk about the fact that the Pac-12 is 5-0 right now in the NCAA tournament, and the Mountain West, well, they are anything but undefeated. They have been defeated quite a few times, but we're going to be diving in on that front. We're also going to be taking a look at what we've all got for the Saturday slate as well, and then in the final segment, we're going to be giving you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Saturday as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline at GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please send these into the timeline. Other way, that's fine, an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter /X questions today other than, why was I such a moron that when I gave out my bracket, I had Auburn in the national title game, which I sincerely apologize about because that was horrible by me. I will vow to do better on this show than to give you guys, oh, I don't know, Auburn actually making a run in the NCAA tournament. That was not good on me, so we'll look to avenge that moving forward. But let's take a look at everything that we did get on the board for this college basketball Friday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
And we will start it right there. Auburn had a 10-point lead with about 7.5 minutes remaining, and they made like your buddy at the bar and could not close. They lose by kind of 78-76. They missed, I believe, 5 free throws in the final 3.5 minutes, and the front half on free throw attempts 3 times in the final minute. You saw them have Chad Baker-Mazzara ejected in this game in the first 5 minutes. Just a unmitigated just amount of issues in general for Auburn. You had Gene Ibrahim give the team 24 points, 13 rebounds as Auburn wins a rebound battle by kind of 35-30, but Yale was just a smarter team in this one. John Poledikas, he also could not miss. He goes 6 of 9 from 3-point range, and if you've copied my bracket, it's been a bad showing by myself, but my goodness, this has been really, really unlucky too. It's two-pronged. It's been bad analysis, and then there's just times where you get unlucky, and John Poledikas just decided to go off in this one, going 6 of 9 from 3 for the Auburn team. By the way, they're going to be wrapping up the season 21-13 against the spread, but for Auburn, they were unable to overcome the fact that he just buried all those threes, while they themselves did have Jalen Williams chip in there, 13 points, 5 rebounds, but Yale finds a way to be able to get the job done. They get the win out there, and been a rough one for the Mountain West here in the NCAA tournament. 77-56, New Mexico has a season low in scoring, and this was the second time that they scored fewer than 68 points all season long. The first time they didn't was without their star scorer, and Jalen Owens, who he had 12 points in this one, and where New Mexico, they don't do a bad job on the glass. They actually win that battle 42-41, but they lose a turnover battle 13-9. They allowed Mr. Hunter to be able to go off for 21 points. As Chase Hunter, he goes just 8 of 16 from the floor, but he was able to do a nice job getting to the free throw line. Actually, he only went 4 of 7 at the charity stripe, but give the team that many opportunities, they're going to be able to pounce in for this New Mexico team. Yeah, JT Toppin gave you 10 boards, but only 6 points, as Jamal Mashburn Jr., 1 of 11 from the floor. That just was not going to cut it. And New Mexico, they end the year a very profitable team out there in the Mountain West against the spread. They'll make you some good coin going 23-12 against the spread, but that was a rough way to conclude it. You did have Utah State, though, be able to bust through late. They were able to take down TCU 88-72, as for TCU, they go 7-22 from 3. Meanwhile, Utah State, they did a very nice job with Gray Osabor being great. 13 points, pair of steals, 7 rebounds, 21 points out of Ian Martinez, as well as for Utah State. They were able to do a nice job winning that turnover battle 14-9. They actually do lose a rebound battle 41-30, as TCU had 21 offensive rebounds. They just did absolutely nothing with them whatsoever. So Utah State, they survive, they advance, they get the job done. And hey, our national title pick is still in Houston. They get the win, they get the very easy cover over Longwood, 86-46, as Longwood was just stuck in the mud in this one. They go 14-41 from the floor. They had 14 made field goals and 18 turnovers. They lost the rebound battle 29-18, by the way, as LJ Cryer, 17 points all by himself for Houston, and Houston goes 11 of 23 from three-point range, so they made quick work of that one. And then we did see a pair of 12 seeds get the job done. Grand Canyon over St. Mary, 75-66, the final. This has been a fun Grand Canyon team all season long, and for Grand Canyon, they did a nice job getting to the free throw line. 28 of 36 at the charity stripe. St. Mary's goes just 7 of 12. Everything else was relatively even. You saw both teams shoot about 28% from three-point range. St. Mary's loses the turnover battle 13-11, but they win the rebound battle 40-34, but Grand Canyon, they did a nice job inducing contact high on Grant Foster, 21 points, 7 boards, gave McLaughlin a double-double. So Grand Canyon, their NCAA tournament run continues. They're able to get the job done. And hey, our DK Network write-up, we finally got one through as I faded my home state of Wisconsin. And Wisconsin did not look good at all in this game. 72-61, the final for Wisconsin. Sarah Lee's Bakery was jealous of the turnovers that they had. They lose their turnover battle 19-12. Every single player, except for one, and Mr. Marcus Iver, hopefully I said that correctly, had at least one turnover in this game. Stephen Krall, 10 points, 11 rebounds, but for Wisconsin, even though they go 8 of 21 from three-point range, they actually shot worse from two-point range, and this could have been worse. James Anderson only went 5 of 17 from three-point range. Yeah, Terrence Edwards give the team 14 points, and this was very thorough domination by a James Madison team that has been a pretty profitable one all season long. Against the spread, James Madison, 19-14-1 against the spread, and if you took Florida Atlantic, this was not profitable. They lose by double figures in overtime, 77-65 the final. They had a chance with a 1-1 to be able to win the game in regulation after they had stormed back. They were down throughout in the second half. They have an opportunity, they do not execute, and for Florida Atlantic, they went on this day 5 of 27 from 3-point range. Meanwhile, for Northwestern, how about Ryan Langbord and Boo Booey? Boo Booey, 22 points in this one. Langbord goes off for 27, and Northwestern has not been a good rebounding team all season long. They win the rebound battle 41-38, thanks to Brooks Barnheiser being able to chip in their 10 boards, and for Florida Atlantic, bad time to have 21 turnovers from the Final Four last season to now sit on their couch for the round of 32. Baylor, no issues over Colgate, 92-67 the final. Colgate just got run out of the gym. For Baylor, they go 16 out of 30 from three-point range. They shoot 58% from the floor. Jalen Bridges puts in their 23 points. Baylor wins a rebound battle 33-24. Just not a lot for Colgate. That was anything but minty fresh for them. For Marquette, their second half was minty fresh. If you took Western Kentucky with about 14.5, this was brutal. As I mean, they got up at the half. They were up at 43-34 with about a minute remaining left in the first half, and then Marquette punked them 51-26 in the second half for Marquette. How about Cam Jones? 28 points, goes 10 of 16 from the floor, and Tyler Kolick, he did not look banged up at all. 18 points, 6 boards, 11 assists, he had himself a heck of a day. Meanwhile, for Western Kentucky, he did have 21 points in this one, along with 5 rebounds out of Tyrone Marshall. He chipped in there some assists as well. I believe he had 5 in total, but Western Kentucky loses that turnover battle 18-10, even though they win the rebound battle 44-37. The fact that they only shoot about 40.5% from floor, now it's not able to make up for the fact that Marquette, they went 13-36 from three-point range. San Diego State, they get the job done for the Mountain West, but they do not cover. 69-65 the final. They had some chances to be able to blow this game open. They were up 12 points towards the middle part of the second half, but for UAB, they're able to hang in there despite the fact that Jaden Ledee was by far the best player out there on the floor. 32 points, 8 rebounds, but for San Diego State, they only win the rebound battle by 2, 35-33. UAB was able to get Ephraim Johnson going. He goes for 19 points, and for UAB, a team that's been rough from 3-point range, they do go 7 of 20 from 3-point range. So, nice quality cover there from the Blazers of UAB, and a quality cover from UConn. This was just absolute domination, and I know that Dan Early at the half was trying to get his team fired up. They weren't able to completely dominate the second half, but still, 91-52, the final in this one, and man, this game just got very, very out of hand very, very quickly, as I think at one point, Setsu was down in this game by something like a count of 44-10, I would like to say. I mean, it was just absolutely ridiculous. 46-10, as a matter of fact, as the starters did not have to play too long in the second half in this one for UConn. Every single one of those starters had at least 12 points. For Stetson, they go 3 of 20 from 3-point range. Stefan Swenson had 20 points for his Stetson. That was actually the top scorer in this game, belonged to Stetson, but that's all that they could hang their hat on. And well, for Colorado, they're able to hang their hat on the fact that they get the job done. KJ Simpson has a around-the-world rattler fall for him as Florida tried to complete what would have been a big comeback, but they come up just short. 102-100 the final. Colorado is up in this game by 11 points with about 4:17 remaining. Florida storms all the way back to tie it 100-100 before Colorado, who is just so efficient in this game. They shoot 63% from the floor, 6 of 10 from 3, 28 of 33 at the free throw line. They find a way to get it done, and for Florida, actually win the turnover battle in this game, 12-8. Problem was, Colorado just wasn't missing. Florida went 19 of 22 at the free throw line themselves. Walter Clayton, 33 points. 9-10 at the charity stripe, 4 of 10 from 3-point range. Will Richard threw in their 15 points, but for Colorado, every one of their starters had at least 12 points in this one. The headline by Simpson, being able to supply the team with 23 points. Very fun up-and-down game. That goes the way of Colorado, and this one goes the way of Texas A&M. For Nebraska, they had their issues outside of Lincoln all season long, and that happened here. 98-83 the final. Talk about getting hit by a falling knife. For Nebraska, they go up against a Texas A&M team that's well outside the top 300 in terms of their three-point shooting percentage. And for Texas A&M, they go on this day 13-23 from 3, with Wade Taylor IV supplying the team with 25 points. Manny Obaseki throws in their 22 points. For Nebraska, they go 7-22 from 3-point range. And Casey Shobanaga and Bryce Williams combined for 45 points, but they got bludgeoned on the glass, losing that battle. 40-28, they lose a rebound battle. So, throw a bucket king there by Texas A&M. Vermont closes the year with 24 unders to 9 overs as they played an underwhelming game against Duke, 64-47. The final for Duke, they go 6 of 18 from 3-point range. Kyle Filipowski did not have himself a great scoring day, but he had 3 blocks, 12 rebounds in this one. All the other starters scoring double figures. Meanwhile, for Vermont, 5 of 20 from 3-point range, 2 of 6 at the free throw line. Jameer Bogues supplies 18 points, but as that, they weren't able to get anything going whatsoever. Alabama got a lot going, though. 109-96. They take down the College of Charleston, and one of the highest scoring second halves, so you're going to find a total of 120 points scored in the second half. They're going to be paired up with Grand Canyon, by the way. That's going to be interesting, as for Alabama, they went 13 of 23 from 3-point range, and they score 109 points on 60 field goal attempts. You had Mark Sears be able to supply the team with 30 points. And the crazy part is, only 3 players for Alabama scored in double figures. So Charles Reitzel, Aaron Estrada were the other two. And for Charleston, they just flat out went 10 of 33 from 3-point range. They were unable to keep pace despite the fact that they played even up in terms of the turnovers. They actually won the rebound battle by a count of 42-34. So that was a bit of an issue out there. No issues for Purdue. They take down Grambling by a count of 78-50. For Purdue, they were laying 26.5. So you're able to get there on them, even though they did pull their starters relatively late in this one. Giant of the Earth, Zach Edey, he's able to supply the team with 30 points, 21 rebounds, and 3 blocks. I mean, my goodness. He had 21 rebounds and Grambling's entire team had 23. They didn't stand too much of an opportunity there. This despite the fact that Tremichael Morton was able to supply Grambling with 21 points for Grambling. They go just 3 of 12 from 3-point range. They don't commit a lot of turnovers, but neither does Purdue. Purdue just 10 turnovers in this one. Braden Smith, 11 points, 10 assists, looked much more like himself in this game. And for Purdue, they were able to lay the smack down in this one. And if you're looking trend-wise at what we've all gotten here in college basketball over the last few days, this is tracking from the last 7 days. So this is going to include some of those conference tournament finals that we've seen and obviously the old NIT trends. But that said, in the last 7 days in college basketball, it has really been all about the overs. 44 overs of 40 unders, 52.5% of games going over the total. Meanwhile, when it comes to the favorites, they went just 40-43-2 against the spread. So a lot of dogs have been barking. If you take a look at what we got in the round of 64 yesterday, 8 overs, 8 unders, with favorites going 9-7 on the spread. And if you're looking overall for the season, favorites, they're hitting at about a 50.7% clip, 2,817, 2,744, and 100 against the spread. While overs, they continue to be just below 51%, 2,850 overs, 2,745 unders. So that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now, and that's what we all got on Friday. Now let's take a look at Saturday's games and what the world has been happening with the Pac-12 explosion with our good friend Curtis Rogers. He does great work over at 710 Seattle Sports, and he joins me next right here on Coast to Coast with myself, Craig Peters, and now a part of the Beasley Family Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And it is always great to be joined by this man as Curtis Rogers. He does absolutely tremendous work over at 710 Seattle Sports, taking a look at a little bit of everything, whether that be college basketball, whether that be overall seeing in terms of hockey with the Seattle Kraken, the NFL, list goes on and on. If it's Pacific Northwest sports, he's doing a great job with it. And hey, Seattle Mariners pre and post game hosting, he's going to be back on that in less than 7 days as well. He does amazing work on that front end. You're able to follow him on Twitter/X at A Kid From Kent all together. And Curtis, it is always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Greg, always happy to be on with you. Yeah, you mentioned baseball starting up in a week, but before that, I mean, we are head over heels here with college basketball. So much tournament action already in the rear view, and the second round starts this weekend, so it's going to be just absolute chaos for the next 48 hours or so as we near the pause in between round two and the Sweet 16.
It's absolutely incredible what we've been seeing. And first things first, let's start it off here. What do you make out of the Pac-12 making this run and being 5-0 thus far in the NCAA tournament? Because that is something I absolutely did not see coming.
No, I don't think anybody saw that coming. I don't think anybody saw Colorado already winning twice. And you know what? This is a great thing for the two remaining members, Washington State and Oregon State, because they're the ones that get to reap all the rewards of the NCAA tournament units that are going to be given to the Pac-12. I believe they're up to $18 million in NCAA tournament units that will obviously be divvied out over a period of time. But yeah, the Pac-12, for as much disrespect as it got during the regular season, they have very much shown to be very battle-tested already. It's weird because heading into Selection Sunday, or really heading into the Pac-12 championship game, Washington State and Arizona were the two teams that I think had the strongest cases of being NCAA tournament locks. Colorado then now being moved to a play-in game, first four, and then Oregon sneaking in and stealing the automatic bid out of the Pac-12 conference. So they get four teams total. Everybody's kind of like, well, you know, it's four teams mostly because of Oregon stealing the automatic bid. But no, they've all shown that they belong. They've all shown that they've been worth the price of admission so far. Things are looking up for those four schools right now as they move on to the second round.
Yeah, it's been very unprecedented, to say the least. Like, I wasn't surprised that Colorado was able to get, like, by Boise State, and even the upset over Florida, them being able to get the job down there, not another shock, but man, 5-0, this has just been absolutely remarkable. And just what do you think this says about these conferences as a whole? Because with the Pac-12, they've been able to rise up. I'm not here to say that the Pac-12 is on par with, like, the Big 12 or anything like that, but I certainly do think that is striking. And thus far, as we know, the Mountain West, who I thought this year was going to be the year that they maybe not prove like all the doubters wrong or anything like that, I didn't think that they would struggle this much. And our good friends, the SEC, with the likes of Auburn and company going down, man, it has not been a good tournament for them.
It really hasn't. You and I, we talked so much about the Mountain West this season and how fun that regular season was, but it has not translated into the tournament. I believe San Diego State is the only Mountain West team to win a tournament game over the last few seasons. And
Colorado State won 1-2.
That's true. Yeah, they won the play-in game. They made it to the field of 64. Congrats to the Rams. But San Diego State, really the only team that has had any kind of sustained success in the NCAA tournament out of that conference. They get a Yale squad in the second round that obviously beat Auburn. A huge upset, one of the biggest upsets of the first round. But now we're into the second round. You're kind of charting paths for all these teams. You're looking at the underdogs, really, that won in round one. You're kind of like, okay, you look at San Diego State against Yale. I kind of have San Diego State moving on to the Sweet 16, probably going to face UConn in the Sweet 16, a rematch of last year's national championship game. Kind of wondered, like, how far can these teams that are going to be the beneficiaries of these upsets in round one, how far can they really turn this thing on? Because you look at, like, NC State being an 11 seed, they get to face 14 seed Oakland in the second round. That is a much better draw than facing number 3 seed Kentucky. I get that Oakland beat Kentucky, but let's face it, if you're lining teams up, one team that you don't ever want to face is Kentucky. So NC State getting a favorable matchup in round two against number 14 seeded Oakland. But yeah, I look at the SEC schools, Greg, too. I mean, sheesh, they have really, really just dropped the ball here in the NCAA tournament. It is not looking good for them. I think a lot of people were planting their flag on Auburn to maybe get something done. They lose to Yale. It has been just a horror show for the SEC. Texas A&M really with the only opportunity in round one to salvage anything there against Nebraska. But right now, the Pac-12, they're flying their flag high, even though it's the last time they get to do so.
Yeah, I mean, man, it has been wild to take a look at those teams. And I think that we're in for a wild round of 32 as well. As Curtis Rogers, he does amazing work over at 710 Seattle Sports. He's joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And we should get some really interesting matchups for Saturday. And I do think that it is going to be very fascinating to see how Oakland responds, because they were the darlings of day number one. They certainly got a little bit upstage in day number two with everything that we saw, those SEC teams going down first to 100 game and that Colorado matchup as well. But now the 14 seed Oakland has a chance to go to the Sweet 16 against NC State. Just what do you make out of this? Because NC State, they were a bid thief out of the ACC, and you've got an Oakland team that they're a bunch that really doesn't play a lot of defense, but they've been able to get it going. And yet saw Jack Golke a few nights ago make 10 threes. And if he shoots like that, they're going to be very hard to beat.
And we know he's going to be shooting threes. You look at his shot chart from this season.
He's taking 8 two-pointers.
Yeah, that's it. And I believe 6 of those two-pointers have come right at the rim. He's only taken 2 shots this season outside of the restricted area and inside.
He probably got his foot on the line on both of them.
It's unbelievable. It's a thing of beauty. It's art is what it is. I'm excited to watch that game. I know an 11 versus 14 matchup doesn't exactly do it for a lot of people, but what Oakland was able to do against Kentucky, just absolutely shoot the lights out. That's a fun style of basketball that they're playing over there. And then, like you said, NC State just being able to ride that momentum of stealing the ACC's automatic bid in all the way to the second round and really just having an easy time of it against Texas Tech, winning by double digits. I don't know if anybody saw that coming. The Wolfpack are playing really, really well right now, and they've got a lot of people on their side. That Wolfpack-Grizzlies game is going to be a lot of fun. You've got an opportunity to go to the Sweet 16 here, and then let's say Colorado gives Marquette a tough time. If I'm Marquette, I'm looking at, you know, just kind of how the bracket is shaping up on the bottom half of the South region. Kind of reminds me a little bit of like Houston a few years ago, where they didn't face a single digit seed until the Final Four. Marquette, if they beat number 10 seed Colorado, they had faced the winner of NC State, Oakland. That's asking quite a bit, because Shaka Smart picks up his first NCAA tournament win, I believe, since the VCU years. So it's been a while since he's had some success in March. Should be an interesting battle. But yeah, that NC State Oakland game should be a very, very fun watch on Saturday.
Yep, I think that that is going to be a lot of fun as well. And then I think that this one's going to be interesting as well, because Dayton was the upstart team that was able to storm back against Nevada. And how I knew my bracket was not going well this year is that I had Nevada, and they were up 17 points with 7.5 minutes remaining and lost outright. That was not fun, to say the least. But that said, now here's Dayton going up against Arizona. They're about a 9.5 to 10 point underdog, so they're thinking that this is going to be about a 9 to 10 point game. What do you make out of this matchup, though? Because Dayton shoots a three really well, and we have seen this Arizona team against teams that knock down the three. They have had their struggles.
Yeah, closing out defensively has been a struggle for Arizona on the perimeter. Guys like Kylan Boswell, Caleb Love, Pella Larson, they're going to absolutely need to come with it defensively. And one thing I'm going to be watching for in this game is the pacing of it. As we know, Arizona loves to get out and run. Tommy Lloyd, coming from that Gonzaga system, loves to put points up on the board. Dayton is one of the slowest paced teams in the entire country. So it's going to be a battle of paces in this game. Can Arizona get the game into a more favorable playing style? And this year, they've really struggled against teams that have slowed things down. They've also struggled in close games this year, games that are decided by just single-digit points or just a couple of possessions. They have not fared very well. It was interesting to see them kind of struggle early on against Long Beach State. How are they going to respond? They came out firing in the second half, and it was no contest, winning by 20. So this year, I think this Arizona team is a little more focused than they were a year ago. I think the bad taste of losing to Princeton is still very much on the tip of everybody's tongues. Look, your two guys in your starting five went to the Final Four in each of the last two seasons. Caleb Love with North Carolina 2 years ago, and then Keshad Johnson with San Diego State a year prior. So they are battle-tested in that starting five, and then obviously Omar Ballo and Pella Larson and Kylan Boswell have played in a lot of big games in their careers too. So they're an interesting team right now. It'll be interesting to see how the pacing of this game goes. Will it be more in favor of Dayton, who plays to a slower style, or will it be Arizona looking to push, looking to make things uncomfortable for Dayton? That's the matchup I'm going to be watching, is who is going to establish their pace early on.
Yeah, but I think that is going to be so interesting to note, because whichever team is able to get their pace, Arizona runs it and guns it. Dayton, they play super slow, super control. Whoever is able to get things at their liking, I think that they've got a good chance to be able to pull that off. As Curtis Rogers, who does amazing work over at 710 Seattle Sports, joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And we all love the NCAA tournament. We all love taking a look at these games. And I'll ask you about Washington State in a second, since that's out there in your neck of the woods. But talk to me about this Seattle team that's going to be playing in the CBI on Saturday. Yes, that does get going on Saturday against Delaware State. And how hyped up are them for that? Because we always love taking a look at the NCAA tournament, but there's going to be NIT, CBI, and CIT action as well. And these are meaningful for these teams that are looking to build up something for the future.
Absolutely. And I think this Seattle U team, just playing postseason basketball is going to be very valuable. I know we've seen teams all across college basketball recently just kind of say, you know what, thanks, but no thanks for these postseason invites. And I think teams like Seattle U really enjoy it because it's added practices together. It's added time together. The season's not over. This Seattle U team, I think they've got talent. Cameron Tyson is one of the best pure scorers in the WAC, averaging nearly 18 points a game. Kobe Williamson is a fun player to have on your team, 9 points per game. I think this Seattle U ball club, I think, can make some noise in the CBI. They are a team that so desperately wants to break through. And any postseason experience, I think, is good postseason experience. So I like this Red Hawks team in the CBI. I think they're going to be a team to definitely watch out for, because, look, they have the ability to play well. They played well against Grand Canyon this year, gave them a lot of fits, even beat them back on January 20th. So I think this Seattle U team is one to definitely watch out for in the CBI.
Yep, I think so as well. I'm going up against where Satan round number one should be able to get the job done. But you know what? We've seen craziness in the NCAA tournament. If you're filling out a CBI bracket, I would not be surprised if there might be a little bit of craziness out there as well. But how about if we do take a look at Washington State and what we can expect out of them on Saturday as well? As I know that that's obviously out there in your neck of the woods. Like that Drake went gold in the game that they played in the round of 64. That helped them out a little bit. But now they go up against Iowa State as a 6.5-point underdog. And it's going to be really interesting to see the clash of styles, because Washington State does have a very clear rebounding advantage in this one. I think the big question is, though, can Washington State go up against these guards and, for lack of a better term, not beat themselves, because Iowa State does such a good job of being able to generate turnovers?
Yeah, that's going to be the biggest thing, is Washington State needing to play their game. In their last seven games, Washington State is just 4-3. They've kind of limped to where they are right now. It was good to see them bounce back late in that game against Drake when they were down 8 with about 7 minutes to play. You kind of wondered, is this Washington State team just kind of running out of juice? They haven't played this deep into a season in a while, at least played this many meaningful games deep into a season in a while. So you kind of wonder just how much they've got left in that tank. But they managed to really bring it at the end of the game against Drake. But Iowa State is a different beast. As we saw them in the Big 12 tournament, just how they were able to just bludgeon Houston to win the Big 12 tournament. They beat Baylor by double digits. This Iowa State team is playing some really good ball right now. Sean Gilbert, Tamin Lipsey. This is a team that gets scoring from a lot of different guys. Four guys in double figures, almost a fifth with Trey King. So they have a really, really interesting rotation that they use. Interesting thing about this game is that TJ Otzelberger was an assistant at Washington under Lorenzo Romar all those years ago. So he has some familiarity with the Cougs. I don't know if that'll come into play here because it was so long ago, but that's an interesting tie-in between these two ball clubs, but should make for a good one. I think Washington State has the rebounding and the defensive prowess to make any game a competitive one, and I think they're not going to go quieter in the night. They haven't gone quieter in the night. I mean, the only game out of those seven that has really been just an absolute clunker for them, I would say, was the game against ASU immediately following their win against Arizona in Tucson. So, yeah, I think Washington State right now, Isaac Jones has been playing phenomenal. One guy they really need to get going, especially from deep, is Miles Rice. That's going to be somebody who, if they can get him going, him knocking down shots like he was early on in the season, watch out for Washington State because they might pull the upset if that's the case.
Yep, I think that he is going to be massively important to their prospects, and that should be a fun one. Two different styles with Washington State being able to glass, and then obviously Iowa State doing a solid job being able to generate those turnovers. As joining me on the show, we do have Curtis Rogers over at 710 Seattle Sports. And Curtis, I want to just open it up to you. We've got a lot that's going to be going down on this Saturday. Round of 32 gets started. Is there a game or two or a team or two that we have yet to touch upon that you're really going to be watching for and you're going to be really keyed in on?
How about the Dana Altman Bowl between Yes. Oregon and Creighton? Fun to see that matchup become a reality. Oregon, a very hot team, winning the Pac-12 tournament. Creighton, I've been very high on. They look the part right now. I think they're playing some excellent basketball. I think that's going to be a highly competitive game. I have Creighton going all the way to my Final Four because they have a lot of veteran talent on that team, especially in that starting five of theirs. No Nembhard as he transferred to Gonzaga earlier this year. By the way, if Creighton beats Oregon, there's a chance that they could end up meeting Gonzaga at some point in that Midwest region. So they would be on the revenge tour, Dana Altman and then Ryan Nembhard at some point. That would be a lot of fun to see. Yeah, I think the Blue Jays and Ducks, that's going to be a fun one. Jermaine Cuisinart, I mean, holy cow, that guy's just been shooting the lights out lately. More than 40 against South Carolina. Now, he is about 35 years old, so you know, he's playing against people half of his age. No, he's like, I think he's 25. But yeah, he's been a lot of fun to watch. I think that's going to be a highly competitive game. Creighton, with their veterans, Kalkbrenner, Baylor Shireman, I mean, you can name them all. I think this game's going to be a lot of fun in one of those late time slots. I'll be tuned into that one for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And both of us were there in the lovely city of Portland, Oregon, working for the official flagship station of the Ducks when they made that Final Four run. So we shall see if they've got another one in them and what is going to be the last installment of Oregon in the Pac-12. But this is not going to be the last installment of you being on this podcast, Curtis. You do such an amazing job over at 710 Seattle Sports. I know you're getting ready for baseball season, but in the meantime, we've got ourselves a tremendous weekend of college basketball coming up. You do a great job on so many different fronts, so let the good people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, we've got plenty of Coug coverage, plenty of Gonzaga coverage, especially with both those teams still remaining. We spoke to Kyle Smith earlier this week, gave a little update on a potential contract extension he's working on with Washington State. We also had Clay Thompson on the show this week, too, nice, talking about his love for Washington State. Yeah, that was a fun interview. So you can check those out at seattlesports.com. I had a kid from Kent on Twitter and Instagram. That's the place where you want to be to follow me and follow along as we all follow the tournament together. And Greg, always appreciate hopping on with you. And this is March, and I'm super excited because the madness has only started and it's just getting underway.
Oh, it has been maddening to say the least. And yep, you are so right. We're only 2 days into this thing, so we've got a lot to come. Curtis, he is dialed in on all of it. Every single time he joins this show, he lends such good insights, much like he did today. So big thanks, Curtis, for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VC Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Saturday as we eat some bank chat.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a six-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last two decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, back here, lovely Las Vegas, for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Curtis Rogers, who does such good work over at 710 Seattle Sports, taking a look at this great game of college basketball. On top of that, he does the Seattle Mariners pre- and post-game hosting. So for those of you guys that like my baseball podcast, which that's going to be back in full swing next week, he's going to be appearing there quite a bit. Does a great job covering everything out there in the Pacific Northwest. So, big thanks, Curtis, for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Saturday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /X feed at @unit_D1, and we are going to be going in rotation order, which is pretty much by tournament. The NCAA tournament games are going to be up first, then you're going to get the NIT games, then you get the CBI games for today, and then we've got one College Insiders tournament game involving Alabama, A&M, and Norfolk State, so we've got a little bit of everything going on here. And how about if we start it with Michigan State and North Carolina? This is 789, 790 on the card from Charlotte, North Carolina, with the Tar Heels, a 3.5 to 4 point favorite. Totals between 140 to 140 and a half. I mean, this might as well be a home game for North Carolina. They're playing in their home state, and I feel like they should be a 5.5 point favorite here. The big thing for Michigan State is, how are they going to be able to match up down low with North Carolina? Now, credit where credit is due. Maddie Sissoko had a really good game against Mississippi State, but now you have to go up against Armando Bacote along with Harrison Ingram. A pair of guys are combining for about 19.5 rebounds per contest. This North Carolina team has really been able to do a good job with their defense as well. This is a top 30 team in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and they've really cut off the 3-point arc, which truly is the lifeblood of this Michigan State team. For Michigan State, they had that rough first month of the season. If you look since, I would call it like December 5th, something in that neighborhood, this team has been shooting north of 39% from 3-point range. But I do think the North Carolina going to do a really good job of just being able to contest all their shots for a Michigan State team that, to their credit, with Ty Walker leading things, giving you 18-plus points per contest, he's been able to keep things relatively efficient with Michigan State. They only turn the ball over on about 14.5% of their possessions, top 55 mark in all of college basketball. But the problem is, you don't have anyone like R.J. Davis in the fold. R.J. Davis, 20-plus points per contest for a North Carolina team that's even more efficient, turns the ball over even less. They shoot it at a better clip from inside the arc. Outside the arc, it's not quite as great, but you also have a bigger swing with regards to this Michigan State team when they're on the road rather than at home, especially when it comes to the defense. As for Michigan State, in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, this team clocks in a relatively respectable 34th in all of college basketball, but they're giving up 14.3 points more per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home. North Carolina, meanwhile, the drop-off is only 2.8 points
per 100 possessions. If you look at just the defense that they're playing away from home, top 20 team in all of college basketball, turns points allowed on a per possession basis. And now you have to look to guys like Jaden Akins to be able to step up for this Michigan State team. He did have a relatively good game a few days ago against Mississippi State. He's been able to give you about 10 points per contest, but with North Carolina also having their star-studded guys, having Elliott Curdue, having someone like Cormac Ryan be able to pop it from three-point range, I think that's too much for a Michigan State team that just really doesn't take you out of your game. They really don't have a lot of ball pressure. They do a nice job of being able to defend relatively all these shots, but at the same time, without really causing any discomfort for North Carolina, I do think that they find a way to get the job done. It is a Michigan State team that, to their credit, they have now given up 67 points or fewer in each of their last five games, but offense has been pretty dormant for them as well. They have failed to get past 70 for their last five games, but now they do go up against a North Carolina team that has been running and gunning at 76 plus points for their last five games. So, good old situation. Something's got to give. Did semi-total 143.5. I think that this could be close enough for late game fouling and a North Carolina team that's in the top 40. In terms of possessions per game, I think speeds it up. I like the over, and I'm going to be willing to lay the number here with North Carolina. Made them a 5.5 point favorite. 781, 792 on the betting board. Texas and Tennessee do battle for Charlotte, and you've got Tennessee a 6.5 point favorite. Your total on this game is 146, so 146.5. Set Tennessee is a 7.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the 6.5 with Texas, much like with Michigan State. I've got my question marks with them when they leave home in terms of this defense. As Texas, in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, they are 89th in all of college basketball, but they give up 20.4 points more per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home. Now, this did not include the first round of the NCAA tournament. That propped them up quite a bit. The fact that they were able to do what they did against our good friends in Colorado State, that did up out their defensive metrics quite a bit, but still, you do have to have your question marks there. Meanwhile, it's a Tennessee team that they're doing everything well. They just completely lambasted at St. Peter's, which, I mean, it's St. Peter's, but still, this Tennessee team is eighth in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and unlike in last years, where you would see this Tennessee team be absolutely awful on offense, now they're connecting. As Dalton Connect, he has been incredible for the team. He's been able to log for the team north of 20 points per contest. Can get them a bucket when they need to, so that way they aren't in these long shooting funks or anything like that. And the rest of the guys, they do a nice job of being able to come along for the ride. You've got some like Josiah Jordan James, who is a really nice Swiss Army knife. Supplies the team with like 8.5 points, 6.5 boards, 2 assists, a steal and a half, just under a block per game. Jonas Adu is able to give you about 7.5 rebounds per game. It's not a Tennessee team that's as dominant as they have been on the glass in past years, but he certainly kicked the tar out of this Texas team. As Texas, you've got Dylan Dessous shooting like 50% for three. He's actually done a nice job, giving you about 15 points, 5 boards per contest. I really like his game. And then you've been able to have Dylan Mitchell supply the team with about 7.5 rebounds per game. But Texas, in terms of their overall rebound rate, they're checking in 138th in all of college basketball. Tennessee, more around 60th. And it's just a Tennessee team that they travel a little bit better as well. Their offense, it does fall off by about 7 points per 100 possessions when they're away from home. But with Texas, you really have to rely upon a pair of guys, Max Asemus, along with Tyrese Hunter, who have both been able to do a nice job giving you 13-plus points per contest to be able to get the offense going, but they just don't have a ton around them. And for Texas, in games played away from them, they're allowing opponents to shoot 38.9% from three-point range. That is rough when you've got a Tennessee team that really doesn't turn the ball over too much. I did set my total at 143.5. Tennessee has played some up-tempo, higher-scoring games. That was out there in an SEC, though, that was a bit more up-tempo. And this is a Texas team that isn't necessarily playing super-duper fast. In terms of total possessions per game, they're pretty mid-tempo at about 195th. So I do think that this game is going to be bogged down a little bit more. Semi-total 143.5. I like the under. And with Tennessee willing to lay up to 7 with them, made them a 7.5 point favorite. 783, 784 on the betting board. This is out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Oregon and Creighton do battle. And Creighton, a 4.5 to a 5-point favorite. Total on this game is 146. I set Creighton as a 5.5 point favorite. This opener was 6. Now that it's gone down to 5, I'm seeing a 4.5 out there. I'm going to be willing to lay with Creighton. Dane Altman, I'm sure you would absolutely love to stick it to Creighton here, but I just feel like this team is a little bit outgunned in general. It is an Oregon team that coming into the NCAA tournament was outside the top 100 in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per possession basis, and you do have your issues with Creighton. Creighton is the worst team in the NCAA tournament in turnovers forced on a per possession basis, but I just don't know if Oregon has the ability to be able to match up with all three of these guys, Ryan Kalkbrenner, Baylor Shireman, Trey Alexander. They're combined to give you between about 52 to 53 points per contest. Kalkbrenner down low, 3 blocks per contest. Shireman shoots 37.5% from 3. And then Alexander, 4.5 assists per contest, while Shireman chips in there for himself. You've got 3 separate players for Creighton. They give you at least 4 assists per contest. They are the only team in all of college basketball that's able to say that. And then they've got a sharpshooter in Mason Miller, who shoots 46.5% from 3-point range, and really one of the biggest undoings for this Oregon team. The way that they guard the arc away from home, Oregon, 36.9% is what opponents are allowed to shoot from 3-point range against them when they're away from home. Meanwhile, this Creighton team, while they don't really pressure the ball too much, they're not going to generate a lot of steals, they do a nice job of guarding the arc. They allow opponents to shoot 32.7% from 3, and I love what Jermaine Cuisenard was able to do a few days ago. I just can't see him duplicating the 40-point performance that he had. I mean, he's been overall for the season giving you darn near 15 points per contest, a rock-solid score, and Jackson Shellstead in the backcourt, he's able to help out quite a bit. Shellstead has been able to give you about 11 to 12 points per contest. When you've had Kerry Okwendo out there, he's been able to do a relatively solid job being able to pop a few threes, being able to help in that sort of respect. But other than Fali Dante, you really don't have a lot down low for Oregon. Now, when he's been out there, he's been much better. And credit where credit is due, KJ Evans, the freshman, he stepped up big in that South Carolina game as well. 8.6 boards, not like some massive stat line or anything like that, but I mean, he's been a relatively solid player for an Oregon team that they take care of the ball. They turn the ball over about 10.2 times per contest, but they just really don't have that explosive three-point shooting that I think is needed to take down a Creighton team that, while they don't generate a lot of turnovers, they're pretty rock solid in the style that they play. It's a Creighton bunch that has allowed 67 points of fear in 3 out of their last 5 games. For Oregon, it has been a unit that has been up and down with their defense all season long, and I don't foresee them duplicating the offensive expose that they put on against South Carolina. It's a circumstance where I'm going to be willing to lay with Creighton. Did set them as a 5.5 point favorite, and did set my total 145.5. Creighton, a relatively mid-tempo team. Oregon, they're a mid-tempo team as well. That has been able to lock it down with their defense as well. Credit is due. Oregon has given up 68 points for fear and for their last 5 games, so circumstance where I do like this 146 under, and I'm going to be willing to lay up to 5 with Creighton. 795-796 is the DK Network Rita pick. Let's get some wins on these. It is Oakland and NC State doing battle, and with NC State, they are a 6.5 point favorite. Your total on this game in between 146 and 147. I think the clock strikes midnight on our good friend Cinderella. I set my line at 9.5. My right up here is on NC State. NC State was not a good three-point shooting defense prior to the month of March. You'll look at their last 5 games, though. They are guarding the arc well. They are allowing opponents to shoot 27.4% from 3-point. They did a masterful job against the Texas Tech team that I believe is better than this Oakland team. And for this NC State team, their kryptonite, it is not going to be on earth. Their kryptonite is the fact that they aren't necessarily a great rebounding team. We love what DJ Burns is able to do. He only grabs about 4 rebounds per game for having all of his size and girth. You would like to see him, you know, little bit better there. Muhammad Diarra, he's the only guy on the roster that gives you north of 4.5 rebounds per game. He's able to supply 7.3 rebounds per game, so there should be some rebounds to be had for this Oakland team, one that has Trey Townsend, who I like. He's able to give you 17 points, 7 boards per contest. Everyone talks about Jack Golke and the fact that he made those 10 threes a few days ago, but you take a look at Jack Golke overall for the season, and I mean, it's a wonderful story. He's their third best scorer, and for Jack Golke, overall for the season, he shoots 35.5% from 3-point range when he's away from home. I just don't foresee him duplicating what he was able to do against Kentucky. I think that that was more of an indictment on that Kentucky defense rather than anything else. Now, you look at Jack Golke, and he's actually been a gentleman that has gotten hot at the right time. He has shot at least 40% from 3-point range in each of the team's last 5 games, at least 36% from 3-point range in all but one out of the team's last 9 games. So it is going to be up to NC State to guard the arc, but they ain't got a guy that's able to turn it up as well. DJ Turn It Up Horn, who's able to give you 17 points. He shoots 41% from 3-point range for an NC State team that is very good with the ball. They are a top 15 team in all of college basketball in terms of fewest turnovers on a per-possession basis. And while this Oakland team, 27th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, their home and road splits are very different. Now, they actually do a much better job on defense when they're away from them. I have no idea how, I have no idea why, but they're giving up 9.4 points fewer per 100 possessions away from home rather than when they're at home. They're overall 270th in the country. Third place slot on a per possession basis. Actually a pretty presentable defense on the road. At home, it's been a nightmare. But with the offense, it falls off by 16.8 points per 100 possessions when they leave home, as the three-point shooting percentage at home, 38.4%. That drops to 34.9% in a road/neutral court setting, and 42.6% of their field goal attempts when they're on the road come from three-point range. That is 55th in all of college basketball. You've got an Oakland team that they do a little bit of a lesser job as well of being able to prevent second chances as well. NC State, while they're not a great rebounding team, they've done an okay job allowing opponents to grab a little bit over 23% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound. They're 81st in the country with regards to road defensive rebound rate. Oakland, they're more in that pocket, about 143rd. And for Oakland, you do have to have your question mark as to what you're going to be able to get out of some of the depth pieces, like a Rocket Watts, for example. He just can't shoot threes. I have never understood his function out there on a basketball court, but he has no doubt been relatively rough. And for NC State, when you've got guys like Ben Middlebrooks and company that really do know their role, they've been able to get some good production out of Casey Morcell, who's been able to do a solid job giving you about 11.5 points per contest, or was in there a steal. And with NC State being able to do such a good job of taking care of the ball, I do think that this Wolfpack team, they find a way to really channel their inner, I guess you'd call it, Jim Valvano, survive and advance. My DK Network write up pick, that is on NC State. I set them as a 9.5 point favorite. I did set my total at 145.5. I think that NC State does a good job being able to guard the three-point arc here to be able to keep this total under. So I like the under, and with my write-up, we're going to be riding with NC State. 797, 798 on the betting board. Illinois and Duquesne do battle from Omaha, Nebraska. Illinois is a favorite of 9.5 to 10 points. Total on this game is 148, and with Illinois, I did set them as a favorite of 8.5 points. I'm going to be willing to take the 10. This is a ultimate battle of offense versus defense. Illinois, top three team in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per possession basis away from home. Meanwhile, their defense, since the turn of the calendar, well outside the top 225 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. And now they go up against a Duquesne team that has not been able to generate a whole heck of a lot of offense outside of two guys. You've got Dade Grant along with Jimmy Clark III. They've been able to combine for about 31.7 points per contest. They give you about 6.3 assists. They both shoot about 33% to 33.5% from three-point range. They're the only two guys on the roster that give you north of 7.1 points per game. But it just feels like it's a different person off this character cast that steps up night in and night out for Duquesne. Like, Jacob Neesis was the guy that stepped up in the first game of the NCAA tournament. He's averaging about 2.5 points per contest. You have been dealing with the injury to Andre Seversov, but Fusani Drame, who was a part of that St. Peter's team that went to the Elite Eight a few seasons ago, he's been able to give you about 6 boards, just shoot 43.5% from 3. Problem is, he's only been able to give you about 7 points per contest. The way that Duquesne has been doing things is whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and by playing tough, tenacious defense. They are playing for something as well. Keith Dambra stepping down at the end of the season as Duquesne, number 39 in all of college basketball. Turns points allowed on a per-possession basis. Meanwhile, you take a look at their offensive efficiency. They are well outside the top 175, 197 to be exact, but Duquesne actually is averaging 2.1 points more per 100 possessions when they're away from home rather than when they are at home. And for Illinois, they've got good versatility, and they do a nice job of it in the glass. You saw Marcus Somas have that triple-double in game number one. Each of your top five scorers for Illinois give you at least 4 rebounds per game. That includes the 23 points per game of Terrence Shannon shooting 36% from three-point range, Coleman Hawkins, Quincy Guerrier. These are big men that combine to shoot about 38% from the outside and combine 22 points per contest. Now, those two guys for an Illinois team that they don't turn the ball over like flat. Only about 11 turnovers per game. Duquesne, though, they're a top 75 team in all of college basketball with regards to turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. And you just look at the way that this Duquesne team has been able to lock down teams, it has been very impressive to take a look at. For Duquesne, they have now given up 70 points or fewer in all but one of their games ever since really the beginning of the month of February. If you want to take a step further, 71 points or fewer, they have given up 71 points or fewer in all but one out of their last 16 games. They have been ridiculous on the defensive side of things. They have been awful on the offensive side of things. Meanwhile, Illinois is bleeding points, but they've gotten to at least 77 in each of their last 4 games. Good old situation of something's got to give, and I think 10 is a little bit too lofty here. I've not been high on Duquesne all season long, but I'm going to be willing to trust them here. I set my line at 8.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points, and I do like this total over, mostly because I think Duquesne keeps this close enough for late game felling. I set my total at 148.5. I think Illinois executes on offense, but I think that Duquesne, I guess a Illinois team has really not prioritized defense. They're able to hold in there. I'm going to be looking at the over, and I'm willing to take the points with the Duke. 799, 800 on the betting board. Iowa State They play against Washington State. Washington State is an underdog with 6.5 points. Opener on this game was 8. Total on this game is 129. And I did set Iowa State as a 7.5 point favorite. Here at the 6.5, I'm going to be willing to lay it. Now, we were talking about this with Curtis Rogers. Can this Iowa State team be able to hold up on the glass? They don't need to win the battle on the glass. They just need to play relatively even up, and I do believe that they're going to be able to do so. For Iowa State, you've got a great backcourt duo in Keshawn Gilbert, along with Tamen Lipsby. These two guys, they combine for about 26.5 points per contest, 9 boards, 9 assists, 4.7 steals per game, while Lipsby shoots 39% from 3-point range. They go up against a Washington State team as in the top 25 nationally with regards to rebound rate. It's all about keeping up with the Jones, Isaac Jones, who's been able to supply for Washington State right around about 6 boards. He's been able to supply the team with 15-plus points per contest. And then Andre Yagmovsky, the gentleman from North Macedonia, he's done a good job. He's been able to give you about 5 rebounds per game as well. But for Washington State, this is a team that has really been able to have things travel with them in terms of their defense. As a matter of fact, they allow opponents to shoot just 31.7% from 3-point range when they're away from them. That compares to about 32.4% at home, but Iowa State has really stepped it up with regards to perimeter defense as well. That was really the one place where you were able to hurt this team earlier on in the season. They're now about 58th in all of college basketball in terms of opponents' 3-point shooting percentage at 31.8%. A top 10 team in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. They in Houston, 1-2 in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis with St. Mary's right there as well. But for Washington State, they need to protect the ball, but even though Miles Rice has been awesome, 15 points, 4 assists, the 2.5 turnovers per game does have me a little bit concerned. Been able to get about 43.5% 3-point shooting out of Jalen Wells as well, but I just feel like Washington State hasn't truly seen a team much like this Iowa State team. They don't face a lot of teams that are looking to generate a bunch of turnovers out there in the Pac-12. I do think that that's going to be a little bit of a shock to the nerves for them against an Iowa State team that you want to talk about a team that has just been an absolute steamroller on defense. This team has given up 65 points or fewer in every single game this month. Last time Iowa State gave up north of 70 points in an affair, you have to go all the way back to the 19th of February. So 9 straight games with 65 points or fewer surrendered. I do think that this is going to be a low-scoring slog, and I think that Iowa State is going to, for lack of a better term, just suck the life out of Washington State. I set my total at a 127. If I like the under, I do think that Milan Mimosilovic, his overall versatility, 11 points, shoots 36% from 3, is going to be just enough for this Iowa State team, along with their rebounding from guys like Trey King and company, to be able to get the job done. Set my line at 7.5. I'm going to be willing to lay the 6.5, and I'm looking at this total under. 801, 802 on the betting board. We head out to Salt Lake City, Utah. This is Dayton and Arizona doing battle, and Arizona is a 9.5 to a 10-point favorite. Your total on this game between 149 to 149.5. I'm going to be taking the points with Dayton. I set my line at 7. Now, for Arizona, they were able to just get over that hurdle of last season, falling short in the NCAA tournament, losing in the round of 64. I feel like that was actually a big one to get under their belt, but now you've got a Dayton team that's free rolling. They were down 17 points against Nevada, left for dead, and this Dayton team, they bomb it from 3-point range. They shoot as a collective north of 40% from the outside. That's a top 10 mark in all of college basketball. Going up against an Arizona team that has not done the world's greatest job of being able to guard the 3-point arc. For Arizona, in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, that's about 34.1% in a roadside shoot court setting. And for Dayton, they allow, when they're away from home, opponents to shoot just 31.1% from 3-point range. That's a top 40 mark in all of college basketball. You've got Deron Holmes, you've got Nate Santos down low for the Dayton team. They've been able to do a nice job combining for about 15 rebounds per game. If you look at the raw rebound rate numbers, Arizona has seemed completely outgunned because they're in the top 5 nationally with that regard. You've got Umar Ballo, 13 points and rebounds per game, but outside of Ballo, you don't have anyone else that gives you north of 5.7 rebounds per game. Keshad Johnson has been solid, 11.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game, but I think that Dayton can actually hold up on the glass with Santos along with Deron Holmes. Holmes has relatively good versatility, and then for Arizona, you've got a pair of guys in Kylan Boswell along with Johnson, who I just mentioned, shooting about 39.5% from 3-point range. Love what they bring to the table. Caleb Love has been just such a more efficient scorer this year than he was in North Carolina last year, shooting 34% from 3, 18 points per contest for an Arizona team that is in the top 20 with regards to points scored on a per-possession basis, and their defense is better than that of Dayton's. There's no question about it. Dayton, in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, they're clocking in 101st in all of college basketball, but they only give up about 3.2 points more per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home, and for Arizona, that hikes up by about 14 points per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home as well. So this is a circumstance where I'm going to be willing to take the points with Dayton. I do think that they're going to hold in there. Dayton won the slowest teams in all of college basketball. basketball. Washington, one of the fastest teams in all of college basketball. Interesting with regards to the total. I set my total at a 149 here, at a 149.5. I do think that Dayton slows things down a little bit, and we've noticed with Arizona as well. They have not been playing quite as up-tempo as they did towards the beginning part of the season. They've now given up 70 points or fewer in four of their last five games, so I like the under, and I like the points here with Dayton. This is the last NCAA tournament game before we hit the NIT. 803-804, Gonzaga and Kansas, who battle in Gonzaga, a 4.5-point favorite. Total on this game, 151.5, and with Gonzaga, I did set them as a favorite of 5 points, so I'm going to be willing to lay the 4.5 for Kansas. They were lucky to be able to get by Sam Iamford. They very nearly made like your buddy at the bar and could not close. And with this Kansas bunch, they just continue to not have any depth whatsoever. You got to love what Hunter Dickinson was able to do 2 nights ago, but he's still dealing with an injury. You have to wonder how he's going to be responding on only about 48 hours of rest, now having to go up against a pair of really good big men in Anton Watson and Graham Ike. These two guys have been able to do a nice job combining for about 14.5 rebounds per game with both of them. They should have well from three-point range. EK about 33% from distance. Watson more like 40% from three-point range for a Gonzaga team that's in the top five nationally in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. Ryan Emhart still hasn't been amazing with regards to shooting it from three-point range, but you look at him in the non-conference portion of the schedule versus conference play, and it has been night and day, and he has been absolutely amazing at doling out the ball. He is currently averaging about 10.2 assists per game in his last four. He has put up just massive numbers in terms of giving out the ball, and then you've got good depth with someone like Ben Gregg, who's able to give you 9 points per contest. Braden Huff has been able to throw in their 9.5. Both of these guys shoot relatively well from 3 points. Where's the depth for Kansas? You've got Nicholas Timberlake, who certainly is not bringing sexy back. He's been able to give you 5 points on shooting 30% from 3 point range. As a matter of fact, with Kevin McCullough out of the fold, you pretty much have three guys on the roster that see meaningful minutes that shoot above 30% from 3 point range, none of which shoot above 36% from the outside. You need scoring out of DeJuan Harris. And in that game against Samford, he was able to deliver 13 points. I think you're going to need a little bit more out of him. And as he scores more, he turns the ball over more. He's had 3+ turnovers in each of the last three games. He's been able to give you about 6.5 assists per contest, but I'm not willing to place any faith whatsoever in Johnny Furphy as well. Now, KJ Adams has been solid, 12.5 points, 4.5 boards, 3 assists. He's got relatively good versatility, sand shooting threes, but I mean, where the Kansas forte is actually on defense. They're a top 45 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but Gonzaga is right on par with that defense. Gonzaga has done a really nice job of being able to lock down recently, giving up fewer than 70 points in 4 of their last 5 games. I think that Gonzaga gets the job done here in a game that might be a little bit lower scoring than expected, as I don't think Kansas does their part with the total. So I did set my total at a 150. I'm going to be looking at the under, and here at 4.5, one to lay with Gonzaga. Now let's hit our three NIT games. These are going to be on the campuses of the host team. This is 805-806 Ohio State. They play host to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, an underdog of 4 points. So on this game, it is 150, and with Virginia Tech, I did set them as an underdog in this ordeal of 7 points. I'm going to be one to lay with Ohio State. Under Jake Diebler, this Ohio State team, they've really been able to find it recently. I've been very impressed by them. You didn't have anyone opt out of this tournament or anything like that. You've got the scene firing all cylinders, as Jameson Battle has been your real outside four, shooting 44% from three, 15 points per game. Now, it's not an Ohio State team that goes into like flamethrower mode from three-point range. They shoot about 34.5% from distance. And if you look at the overall season numbers, Ohio State, well outside the top 125 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, they really don't jump out at you. They do a solid job on the glass with Felix Opara, give you 6 boards, 2 blocks per contest. But they go up against the Virginia Tech team that, as per usual, they are not doing a good job of guarding from the outside. 206th in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. And the Virginia Tech offense, I mean, it just goes all the way down the tubes when they're away from home for Virginia Tech. There's a point scored on a per-possession basis. One of the best teams in all of college basketball when they are at home, as they've been a top 25 team in terms of points scored per possession at home. Problem is, they experience a drop-off of 17 points per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home. You've got Lincoln Kidd down low. He's been able to do a solid job, give you 12-plus points, 6-plus rebounds per game. And then Sean Badula, he's been able to dole out the ball with a little bit over 4.5 assists per contest. He throws in their 15 points, but he does turn the ball for 3 times per game. Now, it's not an Ohio State team that's going to be forcing a whole bunch of pressure or anything like that. And it has been an Ohio State team that ever since we saw the sort of coming of age of Mr. Diebler, ever since he came into the fold, this team has gotten to at least 73 points in all but one of their games, and they've been playing quite a bit more up-tempo, but also a Virginia Tech team that they really don't play with a lot of tempo and flow in terms of total possessions per game. Virginia Tech, once again, checking in well outside the top 225 with that regard for Virginia Tech. As a matter of fact, 266th in all of college basketball with this regard. So I just don't know if you get enough possessions for and over. And I do think that Ohio State, they're going to be able to do a nice job being able to own the paint in this one. Zed Key has been key, being able to give you about four boards per contest. Bruce Thornton does a nice job turning the ball over for an Ohio State team that they only turned the ball over about 10.5 times per contest. And with the way that Virginia Tech just has not been able to execute when they've been away from home, I do think that that helps keep this total under as well. Semi total at a 147. I like the under, and I'm going to be willing to lay it with Ohio State, made them a 7-point favorite. And a 7-8-0-8 on the betting board. Seton Hall plays host to North Texas. The Mean Green are an underdog of 4 points, and your total on this game is between 135.5 and 136. Semi total 127. I'm going to be looking at the under. North Texas, once again, one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball. Now, I will note this with North Texas. They've actually been able to do a very supreme job in terms of being able to get offense scoring recently. In terms of points scored on a per possession basis, it is a North Texas team that is currently checking in the top 100 with this regard, but they do also have a pretty sizable drop-off with their offense when they're away from home rather than when they are at home. They're averaging about 13.8 points fewer per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home, as they shoot well north of 40% from three-point range at home, about 32-33% from three-point range in a road-slash-shoot-court setting, and you've got to see an all-team that they've got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder to prove that, yeah, the Big East was wrong by the NCAA Tournament Committee, and shocker, yes, they were wrong by the NCAA Tournament Committee, but that said, the Seton Hall team, they're not an up-tempo team themselves, and they do a nice job hitting the glass. Top 25 team in all of college basketball with regards to the rebound rate of your top five scores, all but one of them. Elamir Dawes gives you at least 5.3 rebounds per game. Jedi Bediako is the top guy. Bediako, 8.5 points, 7 boards per contest with about 1.7 blocks per game. And then you've got Kadari Richmond, who's just all sorts of versatile along Dre Davis. These two guys combined for 30.5 points, 12.5 boards. Richmond throws in their 2.2 steals, 5 assists per game, while Dre Davis throws in their block per contest and 34% three-point shooting. For a Seton Hall team that they do leave a little bit of something to be desired on the offensive side of things, 149th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, so they do score nearly 13.5 points more per 100 possessions when they're at home rather than in a roadside short court setting, but they still have to go up against one of the slowest, sloggiest teams in all of college basketball, North Texas, that actually gives up fewer points per possession when they're away from home rather than when they are at home. For North Texas, if you look at just the numbers that they put up away from home, top 20 team in all of college basketball, turns points allowed on a per possession basis, with both of these teams not really playing with a lot of pace, with having Mule Sissoko doing a nice job down low for North Texas. I do think that they're going to be able to remain lively in a game that I think is going to be a low scoring slog. So as a result, semi total 127. I like the under. I did set Seton Hall as a 5-point favorite. I think we went just a little bit too far with this line. Fully recognize that Jason Edwards for this North Texas team, supplying you with about 19 points per contest. You got Aaron Scott, Reuben Jones, who are both able to be relatively solid scorers for the team, about 23.5 points per contest out of these two guys, but with North Texas, I do think that they're just going to have a little bit of a tough time on the glass against a Seton Hall team that has been able to do a very solid job of just locking down with their defense in general. So I'm going to be taking a look at this total under, and I'm going to be willing to lay up to 4.5 with Seton Hall. 809-810 is the last NIT game. Before we hit the CBI, it is Cincinnati playing us up Bradley. Yes, we are on to Cincinnati, and they're on to being a 5-5.5 point favorite. Total on this game between 142-142.5. With Cincinnati, I did set them as a 5.5 point favorite. Don't want to lay anything more than 5, but I'm going to be willing to lay the 5. For Bradley, this is a pretty well-rounded team. They don't necessarily have one forte or strength, but they don't necessarily get killed in one aspect of things as well. Bradley is about 62nd in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Bradley clocking at about 54th in the country. They're good, but not great on the glass. They're solid, but not great at taking care of the ball. They're just a relatively well-rounded team. Meanwhile, you've got a Cincinnati bunch that they do a tremendous job on the glass. They're a top 35 team in all of college basketball with regards to their rebound rate. You've been able to have Victor Lakeen be able to step up for the team all season long. Good versatility out of he, along with also Simeus Lucatius. Lucatius, 12 points, 3 boards, 3 assists, shoots about 38% from 3-point range, while Lukin was able to return for the NIT. Now, he only played a few minutes in that game against San Francisco. It's going to be very interesting to see if he's going to be able to play more minutes in this one, but he's overall been able to give you 9.6 boards per contest, with them being able to rest up for quite a few days since that last game, not having to travel. I think that that's going to bode well for him, but even if you don't get a lot out of him, Aziz Bandengo, he's been able to give you 7.5 boards, 1.7 blocks per contest, was an all-whack defensive performer last season, while Dan Skilling is able to give you about 12.5 points per game. It is a Cincinnati team that they leave something to be desired on the offensive side of things. They only shoot about 32% from three-point range. You're hoping for a little bit more out of guys like Day-Day Thomas, Chisel James, and company out there in the backcourt, as Cincinnati, in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, only about 133rd in the country, but they do register about 10.8 points more per 100 possessions at home rather than on the road. And for Bradley Malevi, Leons is a guy with good versatility, 7 boards, 14 points, shoots in the mid-30s from 3-point range, while Duke Dean, Connor Hickman, they combine to shoot 40% from the outside. Between the two of them, just under 29 points, 7 assists per contest, but Bradley does turn the ball over about 12 times per contest, going against a Cincinnati team that has been able to do a good job of being able to guard the perimeter when they've been at home. Away from home, a little bit of a different story, but for Cincinnati, in terms of opponents' 3-point shooting percentage at home, they are allowing opponents to shoot about 32.5% from the outside. Well, it is a Bradley team that, in terms of their opponents' 3-point shooting percentage, they do allow opponents to shoot only about 32.5% away from home as well. So I do think that this is going to be a bit of a lower scoring affair, but it did set my total 137.5. I like the under, but I do think that Cincinnati, with their rebounding in the end, gets the job done, set them as a 5.5-point favorite. So going to be willing to lay the number there and going to be taking a look at this total under as well. And then how about if we hit our 3 CBI games and then the CIT, 8-17, 8-18. All these games going to be played in Daytona Beach, Florida for the CBI, by the way. Arkansas State and Bethune-Cookman do battle. Bethune-Cookman, a 13-point underdog. It's on this game between 152 and 153. A lot of people don't know this, but Bethune-Cookman is actually based out there in the great state of Florida. Wouldn't doubt it if they've got a few fans in the stands there for Bethune-Cookman. In games played away from home, they allow opponents to shoot 33.5% from three-point range, while Arkansas State has one of the biggest drop-offs in offense in all of college basketball when they're away from home. Arkansas State, overall 50th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. They score 23.8 points fewer per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home. That'll keep Bethune-Cookman lively in this game. I'm willing to take the points. I set my line at 12, and for Bethune-Cookman, this is a top 12 team in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. You've got Damani McIntyre, who he only generates about 3 points per game, but he gives you 2 steals per contest. And then you've got your big three out there in the backcourt: Deshaun Dyson, Zion Harmon, Jacoby Heedy. These three guys, they've been able to combine for about 43.5 points per contest. They combine between the three of them to give you north of 5 steals per contest. Now, they themselves turn the ball over about 14 times per contest, but love what I'm seeing there. Going up against an Arkansas State team that they clearly have the more firepower with regards to scoring. You've got 6 different guys to give you at least 9 points per contest, including Freddie Hicks, who's been a little bit in and out of the fold, but 11.5 points, 5.5 boards for a team that shoots about 34.5% from 3 points. Todd. Taren Todd has been able to give you 12.5 points per game, and Caleb Fields, he's able to chip in there about 5.5 assists. He supplies the team with about 12 points per game, and there's no doubt about it. A Bethune-Cookman team that doesn't have a single guy that gives you north of 6 rebounds per game, they're going to be outgunned on the glass. Bethune-Cookman, in terms of their rebound rate, they are checking into an 84th in all of college basketball. Meanwhile, this Arkansas State team checks in at 81st in all of college basketball with regards to rebound rate, but I do think that Bethune-Cookman, they generate those turnovers to hold in this game. Set my line at 12, so going to be willing to take the points with Bethune-Cookman, and I think you're going to see some very up-tempo action out here in the CBI. Arkansas State, certainly a team that has been playing up-tempo, and for Arkansas State, they are well outside the top 250 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, so circumstance where semi-total on 156, I'm looking at the over, and I'm going to be willing to take the points with Bethune-Cookman. 819, 820 on the betting board. Chicago State playing their first sufficient one game since like the middle of February is going to be coming up against UC San Diego. UC San Diego, a 10-point favorite with your total 139, and I mean, my goodness gracious, somebody needs to make a movie about this Chicago State team. A team that knocked off Northwestern on the road earlier in the season as a team without a conference, and I'm going to be able to take the points with Chicago State. This is one of those rest versus rust situations, and well, you're not going to have any shortage of rest when it comes to Chicago State. Last time they played any game whatsoever was on the 19th of February. Their last official opponent was Eastern Kentucky on the 14th of February. So something's got to give over here. Meanwhile, you got a UC San Diego team that has been relatively solid all season long. I like Bryce Pope giving you 18.5 points per contest. You've got relatively good balance with this team. They shoot 35.5% from three-point range. In terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis, a top 50 team in all of college basketball for UC San Diego. They're about 127.
something off college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Just a touch more efficient on the offensive side of things. 64th in the country with that regard. And I mean, their home and road splits are actually relatively favorable as well. And then you've got Tyler McGee along with Eniwana Tiat Jones. These two guys, they've done a solid job, both being able to give you about 13.5 to 14 points per contest. Tiat Jones has been able to chip in there, about 6 boards, 3 assists, steal per contest, while McGee shoots 40% from 3-point range. But Chicago State, they do a really good job of being able to just execute their defense. They're a top 25 team in all of college basketball with regards to turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Not a team that's really going to light it up from three. Wesley Carded, he's going to need to get the offense going. He's one of just two guys on the roster that give you a double-figure amount of points, but he is supplying the team with 18 points, 4.5 boards, 2.5 assists. Shoots 36% from 3-point range. Brent Davis has also been able to shoot 34% from the outside, and he's been able to generate, along with Noble Crawford, a combined between the two of them, 4.1 steals per contest. Chicago State needs to protect the ball. They're turning the ball over about 13.5 times per contest, but they're going up against a UC San Diego team that they really don't force a whole heck of a lot of ball pressure. You've been able to get nearly 2 steals per contest out of Aiden Gray, who's been able to give you about 9 points, 4 boards, 4 assists. He's been a little bit of a Swiss Army knife guy for this UC San Diego team, but I think Chicago State is going to be fired up for this. They really have nothing else on their mind, as they have not played a game against a Division I opponent in quite some time, and Chicago State actually played quite a few games out there in the great state of Florida earlier in the season when they were doing pretty much their round tour, and I think that that's actually going to play a little bit to their advantage. I did sell my total at 136 half. Chicago State well outside the top 250 with regards to total possessions per game, and this is a UC San Diego team that they themselves about 262nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Sell my total a little bit lower because I think that this is actually very, very meaningful to Chicago State, and I think that they're going to play like it. I set my line at 8.5. I'm going to take Chicago State in the motivational spot, taking a look at the under and the points with Chicago State. 821, 822 on the betting board. It is Seattle playing against Delaware State. Delaware State is a 12.5 point underdog with your total 137, and it's a circumstance where I also set my line at 12.5, so we're going to be waiting on a little bit of line movement here. If we could get down to more like a 12, I'd be willing to lay with Seattle. We saw this a little bit earlier in the week, be more around a 13 to a 13.5, and that's my buy point on Delaware State. It's a Delaware State team that's actually been able to do a relatively solid job in terms of their defense. Problem has been on the offensive side of things. They're a relatively one-dimensional team, as you've got two guys that really supply the boom for the team. Martez Robinson along with Javian Munoz. These two guys, these been able to give you about 31.5 points per contest. Munoz has been able to chip in there about a steal and a half, 3 assists per game on 35% three-point shooting, and would be remiss to not mention the fact that Dave Wilk Tavares has also been able to give you about 3.5 boards, 3.5 assists, 13.5 points per contest, but you just haven't had a lot of the big men be able to step up in terms of their offense. As outside of that big three, you've got Wesley Oba, who gives you about 6.5 points, 6.5 boards per contest, and that's about it. Meanwhile, for Seattle, while they are very much based around Cam Tyson, their top scorer gives you 17 points, shoots 38% from 3-point range. He's got a lot more help this year with Alex Shoemaker, John Chrysophilius, the gentleman from Creighton, being able to combine for about 26.5 points per contest. Shoemaker, your main facilitator with about 5 assists per contest, and this Seattle team, they will lock you down in terms of defense, in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Seattle, a top 35 team in all of college basketball, and it's a defense that travels relatively well. They do give up about 10 points more per run or possessions away from home rather than at home, but he's still done a nice job on that front. Meanwhile, Delaware State, they're about 69th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, but Seattle, by far the better offense, even though they do commit about 13 turnovers per contest. It's a Seattle team that is 201st in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, only scoring 0.2 of a point fewer per 100 possessions away from home rather than at home. Delaware State, 321st in the country with this regard. And for Delaware State, they do have one massive kryptonite in their defense. They do not guard the arc to save their lives. 305th in all of college basketball in terms of opponents' three-point shooting percentage away from home. They allow opponents to shoot 35.9% from the outside. Meanwhile, it's a Seattle team that has been able to do a relatively solid job of being able to contain teams for 36th in the country in terms of opponents' three-point shooting percentage. Fully recognize that Delaware State does a relatively solid job being able to generate turnovers, but I do think that Seattle going to be able to do a solid job being able to get the job done here. It's a team that isn't necessarily dominant with regards to rebounding, while Delaware State is about 139th in all of college basketball, but I still think that they're going to do a formidable job there, as they're about 63rd in the country in terms of their rebound rate. So did set my line here at a 12.5.
If we could get back to that 13+, that'd be my buy point on Dale Worsaid. Did sell my total 136.5. I think that both these defenses show up and show out. I'm going to be looking at the under and taking 13+ here with Dale Worsaid. And now we wrap things up with the CIT. 881, 882, Norfolk State and Alabama A&M new battle. Norfolk State, the home team, is a 9-point favorite. The last game is 142.5. Made my line 12. I'm going to be willing to lay with Norfolk State. I'm yay verily for Alabama A&M pulling off an upset as a double-digit underdog against Austin Peay to be able to get in this spot. But for Alabama A&M, this team is just all sorts of banged up, and I just don't know where the offense is going to be coming from. They've had one double-figure scorer throughout the year in Dallin Smith, and last we saw him was on February 5th, which means that you're relying upon Cam Tucker along with Omari Peak, a pair of guys that give you about 18.5 points per contest. Tucker has been able to give you 4 assists per contest, but you just don't have a lot of three-point shooting with Alabama A&M. They shoot 28.5% from three-point against a Norfolk State defense, in which if you don't turn the ball over, there's something to be had here. Norfolk State, in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis for a team as in the bottom 20 in all of college basketball, in terms of total possessions per game, they're about 189th in the nation, but at home, and they are playing this game at home, they do give up about 13.2 points fewer per 100 possessions rather than in a roadside shooter court setting. Meanwhile, for Norfolk State, they do allow opponents to shoot about 34.5% from three-point range, so they do give up some open looks there, while Alabama A&M in a road or neutral court setting, they allow opponents to shoot 35.5% from three-point range. For Alabama A&M, this offense has just been absolutely ghastly all season long. 333rd in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. If you look in just a road-slash-neutral court setting, that goes down to about 340th, while Norfolk State has actually been able to get quite a bit of something going. They're about 135th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. You've been able to have the transfer from UNC Wilmington do a nice job of leading the way, as they've been able to get right in the pocket about 17 points per contest out of Jamari Thomas. He's done a nice job being able to set up other guys with the way that he gives out about 4 assists per contest, shoots 39% from three-point range himself. And for Norfolk State, in games played at home, they're a top 20 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. Alabama A&M, a bottom 30 team with the way that they take care of the ball. They turn the ball over north of 16 times per contest in terms of turnovers committed on a per-possession basis. 358th out of 362 D1 teams. I think that Norfolk State is going to be able to mop the floor with them. Did somebody total 138? I flat out just don't think that Alabama A&M does their part with this total, so I'm looking at the under, and I'm going to be blown away with Norfolk State. Set them as a 12-point favorite, and that'll wrap things up for the Saturday edition of Coast to Coast Seeps, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. A big thanks to Curtis Rogers of 710 Seattle Sports for joining me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Seeps, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to find those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline at GNN_41. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season. That means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.